Chinook. It's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome to Chinook Profiles. I'm Paula Schiller, and today we visit the Bear Gallery at Alaskaland here in Fairbanks, where an exhibit of Native art called Alaskamute opened. The show will travel to other parts of the state, and later, some of the masks which make up the main body of the show will be placed in the art bank of the Alaska State Council on the Arts. The masks were made by Native artists during a two-week-long workshop held at the Native Arts Center of the University of Alaska. Ron Sanungatuk was the workshop coordinator and instructor. The participating artists were Fred Anderson, Henry Bighead, Sam Fox, Rick Sigana, and Joseph Sanungatuk. Also included a student, Kathleen Carlo, and instructor, Glenn Simpson. These artists made masks based on traditional Native designs. A mask, by its very nature, has to be somewhat traditional. However, neither Ron Sanungatuk nor artist Sam Fox consider the masks in the exhibit traditional pieces.
There was no attempt to say to the artist that mask should be Eskimo or should be like 19th century. It was free type of activity. I think most of them were inspired from earlier masks that are part of the collections in the museums and what have you. Because the traditional masks were last used around 1840s or 50s or 60s. I remember that the missionaries and so on came around and essentially stopped the custom of dancing and using ceremonial things, dances and festivals, annual festivals. And many of these places, these masks were just forbidden to be used, and so the practice of using the mask just stopped.
So the tradition hasn't been carried on. It really has to be relearned.
Those things are sort of traditional only in a sense that in 1940s and so on, some people started making masks for sale. They're traditional in that sense. Mm-hmm. They're not really traditional.
I don't think anything I made is really traditional. It's just based on the stories I used to hear about the fox and the crow. And I don't think it's really traditional.
Mask maker Sam Fox. His masks were inspired by stories he heard as a child and research he's done in books. To him, a traditional mask is a copy of an old design. So his masks are not traditional, even though they are rooted in his own traditional background. Other artists followed the old patterns more faithfully, and then there are a few that the historians might reject out of hand. Many non-traditional materials were in evidence, such as copper plumber's pipe, chrome-plated corkscrew stakes, the kind for tying dogs, and acrylic paint. Instructor Ron Sanungatuk made sure the traditional materials were available, but he left the rest up to the artist's imagination.
I stayed away from most of the decisions on these things. I only made some statements to the effect that we shouldn't have to look at it in terms of that they are for dances, but that they are for art, treated in terms of art, and that's what they did. You know, they were thinking about art, they were not thinking about culture or dancing, but they were thinking about art.
Can you maybe try and help us find out more about the difference between a mask that is art and a mask that is a traditional mask?
When it was when they were used for dancing, let's say about 100 years ago, 200 years ago, they were real art. They were art.
I imagine those are the most traditional things that they used to use on a lot of things like dances and different dances. for like the hunters and like people going to different villages used to have dances, and that was the main art that they used to have is masks mostly.
We can't really do as well as they did, I don't think, but we can get inspiration from them and do something else. We don't have to try to make anything better. I don't think we can. They were real art, and then when somebody started collecting these things and put them in Sheldon Jackson Museum and other places, then we started to glorify them, and somebody said that they were important ritually and so on. They were far removed from us. I think we have to be right, really with them and make them, and not really care too much about what anthropologists or other people say. I think we just have to do them in terms of art.
And that in turn would preserve some meaning to the artist?
I'm not interested in preserving. I'm interested in art. Art is different from preserving.
Well, I'm thinking of maybe the personal feeling, instead of just making a mask that you were going to sell, that
okay,
wasn't traditional
okay.
or not.
If you put it, yeah, right. If you put it in that way, let's put it that way. If we just make art, I mean, piece of a mask that looks like mask for the sake of just selling, it just becomes a almost like trinket item. It no longer deals with art. It's some sort of your product is your purpose of it is to make 8 hours a day's worth of dollars, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not, but you can take a different look in dealing with this now in terms of art. You can create, you can make a whole new kind of expression.
I think maybe you don't
have to worry about that you're going to get $100 out of one mask, but that you maybe your concern maybe will be to deal with forms, expression of the thing, your own expression maybe, or the environmental expression, or maybe 1978 expression. If those come out, I think that's okay.
Was that the whole point?
Maybe.
If the point is that the artists express themselves in their work, that they take the traditional form and make it their own, then what happens to the tradition? When does traditional native art become simply art without the adjectives? Again, Ron Sanungatuk.
This is a very tough area. Is, I think maybe you should be an artist first and not having to be an ethnic part of an ethnic group always.
Mm-hmm. So you maybe.
I mean, if you happen to be an Alaska Native, you're charged with having to produce pieces of work that look Eskimo or Indian, something of that sort. I think artist should really be representing himself, and his work doesn't have to be Germanic, Italian, Japanese. I think it should be his own work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what's going on here, I think. It's
is
fine
that?
if he relates to his background, that's fine.
Uh-huh. Now, Sam, you had said that you put a little bit of your own area, you put Bristol Bay into your fish mask, because that was where you're from when you did that on purpose. But I was wondering if an artist would rather not be identified with a region, that's a King Island mask, that's a Bristol Bay type thing, does that kind of a label maybe detract a little bit from whatever the artist was trying to say with the work of art?
Yeah, that's a sensitive area. But I think you leave it up to myself when I deal with the students at the Native Arts Center, and also when I was dealing with this workshop, I left it up to the person whether that person wants to identify with a region or not. Some people are very sensitive about that.
That they would not want to be identified.
Mm-hmm. I'm very sensitive about that when people say I should do just ivory carving or that I should call myself Alaska Native artist. I don't care for that. I would rather recognize myself as a person who happens to be Alaska Native.
And who creates art.
Mm-hmm. I'll put it this way. Like Rick Sigana said, he said he is not a mask maker, but he's an artist who happened to make some masks.
Six artists who happened to make some masks were brought together by Ron Sanungatuk this fall to participate in a mask-making workshop. Earlier, we heard from Sam Fox, one of the artists whose work is included in a traveling exhibit called Alaskamute. I'm Paula Schiller, and this program is called Chinook. Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.
Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaska Natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
This is Chinook Echoes. Not long ago, we had a program about an exhibit of masks, masks that were made last fall, and they were shown in an art gallery. Today, we're going to discuss masks that reside in museums, specifically the University of Alaska Museum. Here is the museum's curator of ethnology, Dinah Larson.
When people see masks today in a museum, they generally see only the mask, and it's viewed depending on the person that's seeing it and depending on how it's presented. They see it either as an art object, art with a capital A, or as some type of curiosity. They are not seeing it as an integral part of the culture from which it originally came, whether it's a mask from Asia or Africa or North America or wherever. Masks have been used by hundreds of different cultures for thousands of years for a variety of reasons, basically as a means of communicating with the supernatural. Masks have only really been collected by individuals and by museums for about the last 100 years. And many of the masks that are in museums today were collected without any information, somewhere from the north coast of Alaska or somewhere along the Congo or from Burma or wherever. And often the information was not recorded, especially in the early days when there were linguistic, you know, communications problems. We have a lot of descriptions of early ceremonies that took place in Alaska, viewed by Russian explorers or missionaries or whoever, and they wrote down pretty much what they saw, but they were only seeing the tip of the iceberg, so to see. They didn't have the cultural explanation behind what they were seeing.
Now, is that part of your job as an ethnologist,
well,
to track down or try to piece it together?
Being an ethnologist is a little bit like being a detective. Sometimes it will be years before you will be able to fit all the parts of a puzzle together. And one of the interesting and one of the things about masks up here, and a problem too, is that there aren't very many people left who remember masks when they were indeed an integral part of the culture used in specific ceremonies. The early missionaries in Alaska who came here representing a variety of denominations generally discouraged, actively discouraged, the use of masks. And as an integral part of various ceremonies, the masks used in it were destroyed afterwards.
So both the reason and the masks are gone. The reasons
in many cases, yes. There are a number of people who have attempted to track down these things. There's a book on masks by a woman named Dorothy Jean Ray, and she talks about Alaskan masks and how they were used as part of the culture. They were almost always used in conjunction with a costume.
Mm-hmm.
And we generally don't see the costumes.
You just see the mask on
the
wall.
You just see the mask on a wall or on a pedestal or something. There is a very interesting movie called Land of the War Canoes that was put together by the photographer Edward Curtis about 60 years ago. And the filming was done, I believe, on Vancouver Island. And it shows, it's a story, a filmed story, and it involves the use of masks. And in this movie, for the first time I saw Northwest Coast masks used with traditional costumes. And it made all the difference in the world.
Can you maybe give us an idea of how
they
were used?
They had, for example, the grizzly bear mask. The man who wore that was dressed as a bear. And everyone had on a costume. You weren't just seeing somebody standing there in Levi's or something with a mask on. You know, they had become that particular
creature.
Acted
like a bear and did bear motions.
Yeah, well, the mask was, as a generalization, the mask was believed to contain a spirit. And when you put on that mask and the costume and participated in the particular ceremony, you became the earthly embodiment of that spirit. You were not just Joe Doak, somebody's neighbor out there. You were that being, that supernatural being. Again, that's a generalization. You could compare it to certain religious ceremonies in our culture. If the minister or the priest is participating in a ritual, you're not really thinking that, you know, gee, he's Father so-and-so or he's Reverend so-and-so and he lives down the street and likes to go fishing or something. You are participating in that ceremony and he is leading it, you know.
Mm. He takes on another
role.
Mm-hmm.
Masks were also used not only in sacred ceremonies, but they were used occasionally in secular ceremonies for fun, as caricatures of various people or in a humorous manner. And of course, this had a lot of cultural connotations too. I mean, there were certain people that you could make fun of and get away with, and there were others that you were not allowed to do so. But masks are still used today in a lot of different parts of the world, and they still have powerful meaning. You know, they're used in a traditional way, for example, in parts of Asia and Africa. And the use of masks is now coming back in parts of Alaska to be used in secular ceremonies and presentations, because a lot of people are starting to really get interested in the past and to make young people aware of this. For example, the number of Alaska Native dance groups has multiplied just immensely over the last few years.
There's the one kind of mask that is sort of, I guess, new and old at the same time, and that's the Anaktuvuk pass mask.
Well, as I understand it, the caribou skin masks that we know today as coming from Anaktuvuk Pass began as a joke by three or four men a number of years ago in the late 50s or early 60s. They were familiar with masks, and they also were familiar with Halloween masks as used in our culture, and they thought it would be fun to make some masks and appear at a village function just as a joke, and they did, and people thought it was nice, and And then someone showed up in the village and thought the masks were interesting and wanted to buy them. And it's gone on from there, and it now is a cottage industry in Anaktuvuk, and they're very easily recognizable masks.
For a mask to wind up in a museum, does it have to be ancient or old?
No. Lots of people have the idea that museums only collect old things, and of course everyone has a different idea of what's old. To a 10-year-old 15 years ago is ancient history. To someone who's 90, old can mean 150 years ago.
Well, are the Anaktuvuk pest masks, now, are they in your museum?
Yeah, we have several. We're interested in collecting things that people are making and using today, because of course in 50 years they'll be old, and it's important to find out what people are doing and using and thinking about today. And that's one of the functions of a museum. Everyone thinks we just want old things, but that's not quite true.
What can a museum do to bring out the little bit of the history of masks? You say a lot of people see them isolated on a wall or a pedestal and you don't know how they were used. Is there some way to bring that to life to the people that come and look?
It's difficult because, of course, there's nothing like the real thing, the real ceremony, which is not possible to present. You can use photographs, you can use costumes in conjunction with the masks, you can use recordings of music, a good text, a brief good text. Most people that go to museums, spend something like 3 seconds on each label. In the new museum building, everything from a particular region of the state will be presented together. The biology, the animals, flora, the fauna, the geology, and the people who lived and who still live in that area will be presented together. When you go in the museum, our present building, things are presented in chunks. The animals are here, and the people are here, and the archaeology is here, and there are a few flower prints here. And it's not really an integrated approach. But if we have some kind of background on it, like here's a photograph of a woman using this, here's the product that was made with this tool, this is how it was held, this is how it was used, these are the kinds of people that made these objects. And then it has some meaning. You can say, oh, well, I can relate to that.
Helping us relate to the past, Dinah Larson, curator of ethnology at the University of Alaska Museum. In For Chinook Echoes, I'm Paula Schiller. Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.